The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy, our new weekly Gaelic football show.
Lads, it's official, right? No GAA player was practicing tackling at all during lockdown. They were practicing that dummy bounce.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network. The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, you are very welcome along. It is the Paddy Power Half Hour every Friday afternoon, bang on 1:30. We're with you to tease our way through the fixtures of the weekend and hopefully navigate the choppy waters with the betting markets. This is our last show for now because the season is officially over, with the exception of the biggest game of the year. And it's a pretty interesting one. So we're obviously going to talk in great detail about that. However, there is many other things that we can talk about when it comes to the betting markets, in particular about the managerial merry-go-round. There are some interesting markets and some conclusions to be drawn from them. So we're going to get into those over the course of the next half hour. If you want to get in touch with us, 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Or, of course, you can drop us a comment on the YouTube stream, or you can tweet us at Off The Ball. Joining us this week, Statsman, odds compiler from Paddy Power, Emmett O'Keefe. Emmett, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jared. Just hoping we get a better game than the Europa League final during the week.
I think we will, because I think that these two teams are actually much better. The quality is much better. And so therefore, I would expect that there will be some people who are able to pass the ball to each other and maybe pass the ball forward and create some actual opportunities to score. Enda, how are you?
Jared, how are you getting on?
The managerial merry-go-round is where we're starting this week, right? You don't have any Ole Gunnar Solskjaer here whatsoever. We know the club are going to give him a new 3-year deal, but I don't think that guarantees that he's going to be the manager after Christmas.
Definitely not if they start the same way that they started over the last couple of years. That's been United's downfall, really, is the slow start to the season and then finally picking it up around October time, early November time. And I mean, that's been the issue the last couple of years under Solskjaer. That's what has been holding them back. So it's really about his start. If they start again like they started last season and they're already essentially out of the title race by Christmas, then that's when Ole will have serious issues. But I don't think there's many people would argue with you. Maybe the people who are outside of the camp a little bit more, the Manchester United fans, well, that Ole is not making progress. And I think it'll all depend on the summer transfer dealings that Manchester United do. If they get a number six and they get a centre back, then you're thinking United can definitely progress again next season. And if they get a new manager, then we start again. We start again with the Paul Pogba maybe not being there next season. Maybe Rashford isn't the player that the manager wants. Cavani, is he really the striker that the manager wants? And you start the cycle all over again. United are back where they were when they got Ole in the first place. So I think give him another at least half a season, see where they're at, and then continue on from there.
See, give them another half a season. That means the clock is ticking right now, because the half a season telescopes to no time if it doesn't go as well as you wanted or whoever is actually making the decision. And, you know, the Manchester United fans might be very important when it comes to that. So very interesting to see how the home crowd react to him. Emmett, we've asked you to talk to us today about the different managers and the different jobs that are open at the moment. Some of the biggest jobs in world football are open at the moment. Some of the best managers are open at the moment. There's no markets, I presume, about Manchester United and their next manager just at the moment, given that Solskjaer looks relatively safe.
We actually added the market actually during the week after the Europa League final, with currently Max Allegri's favourite at 5-2, given he's the he probably shouldn't be favourite given his opening for Juventus. So probably Brendan Rodgers more viable at 4-1, Julian Nagelsmann 6-1, and probably Mauricio Pochettino, I'd say, if he doesn't take the Spurs job, I think probably be the most viable contender. He's currently 8-1.
This is obviously, you know, it's all moot because Solskjaer's going nowhere as it stands, and before all the Man United fans get very angry, because we asked John Giles about this, we were accused of clickbait. It was like, let's not have a conversation about the manager of one of the biggest teams in world football who just hasn't reached the same levels that he wanted to. So, you know, I understand the Manchester United fans are feeling a little bit sensitive this week. They're a little bit sore about the quality of football that they inflicted on all of us who had to sit up and watch it, but at least the penalty shootout gave us the drama that we desired. Where are we starting, Enda?
I suppose we'll start with Tottenham and Pochettino, because again, there's rumours that Pochettino was going back to Spurs. And I don't know, this is a weird one for me, Jared. Like, PSG are saying he's going nowhere at the minute. Poch is talking about how much he used to love Spurs. And I wonder, is this a last-ditch ploy of Levy's to try to keep a hold of Harry Kane, saying, look, well, I know you really enjoyed playing your football under Pochettino. If you stay, then we'll get him back and we'll get all the band back together and we'll have success. But they won't have success, Ger. They won't have success. And the reason that I think they won't have success under Levy is that they need to change the way that they're working. They need to change the way they're operating. If you look at the success across Europe over the course of the season, there's two correlations that make a winning side, and that is the wage bill and the amount that the team costs. If you look at the Premier League, the top four, Man City, Liverpool, Man United, Chelsea, that's the wage bill. That's who is top four. That's who finished top four in the league. After that, you have Arsenal, who are way ahead for some reason on wage bill, Spurs, Everton, Leicester. So it's the exact same as the table in different orders. La Liga, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico, Sevilla, top four. Top four wage bill. Serie A, Juventus, Inter, Roma, Napoli. The only exception there is at Atlanta, and that's where I think Spurs have two options here. They have one option is to spend money. Daniel Levy needs to get his money out of his wallet, spend money on people like keeping Harry Kane, give him a bigger contract, bringing in bigger players who are going to be getting higher wages. We've already spoken about how low Spurs' wages have been over the last couple of years. And they need to do that. They need to make the step, and they need to continue to spend, because you will not win trophies without spending. Or you go down the Atlanta route, you go down the Leicester route, what Leicester are trying to do, and you get a really smart manager with a really smart scouting system, and they all work together to try overachieve for the wage bill and the money that you're spending. That's what Spurs need to do. I don't think Daniel Levy's going to do either of those. I think he's going to continue to try bring in these managers who he thinks will bring them money, bring them trophies without spending any money, and it's just never going to happen. Spurs are going to continue to be in this weird zone where they might get top four, they might win a trophy here or there. The last time they won a trophy was 08. But that's where Spurs are going to stay if they don't start doing something.
Okay, but reaching the Champions League final by any metric is considered success, right? Even if you're Bayern Munich, if you reach the Champions League final, it's considered a successful season. So they have had success following this model. They've just had the wrong manager for the last 18 months.
But they haven't had success following this model.
We're reaching the Champions League final, qualifying for the Champions League every year.
One time.
Yeah, but they qualify.
That's not a success.
More often than not, under Pochettino, being in the top four would be considered success because they're outperforming, as you've said, the metric, which is finish, which is spend, spend, spend. And like, there are other ways in world sports. Okay, so the Oakland A's had a very specific model of trying to find value and tacking when everybody else ticked. I think that the notion that the only way that Spurs can break into the top four is to match the spending of Manchester City and Liverpool would to suggest, or Arsenal would be to suggest, that those clubs have invested every single penny wisely. Chelsea and Manchester City are burning money that they are pulling from the ground. There must be a better way of doing this. And if you look at Manchester United's wage bill, it has been scandalous, the amount of money that they have completely wasted on players in recent years. So I would argue that Daniel Levy has a little bit of sense when it comes to this, as opposed to just piling money into transfers for footballers who may not be worth it.
Well, again, this comes down to what you think success is. So is success for Tottenham top four football?
Yes.
Or is it? So
yes.
If that's what they want. But if Tottenham want to be a club that are the big six, who are part of the Super League, then they need to start winning trophies. Their last trophy was 08. How can you say that Tottenham are a big club who deserve to be in top four football if they're not winning any trophies? Top four is not the same as
winning
trophies.
The League Cup's irrelevant. The League Cup is absolutely irrelevant.
So then it's even longer. It's even longer than since Tottenham won.
Arsenal won a bunch of FA Cups, and we're not a relevant team when it came to that. But just to the point you made about how can they think they're in the top six, or how can they think they're in the European Super League? They didn't volunteer for that. They had to get invited. That wasn't something that you rock up, you pay your fiver entry fee, and you go, hey, we're in the Super League now. There was no red velvet rope, and there was no bouncer. They got invited in because obviously the rest of Europe views them as potentially a sleeping giant or some kind of financial powerhouse. They've got an incredible stadium in one of the biggest, most important cities in the world. Spurs, with the right management, could actually be easily a top four club who could contend. Maybe Pochettino's the man to do that. I don't know. It seems like he shouldn't be going back, never go back. Emma, what's your take?
I tend to agree with you, Jerry. I think Tottenham will never be able to outspend Man City. They'll never be able to outspend Man United. They're never going to be outspend a Russian oligarch. And the way they can compete is by getting a top manager who can innovate. If you look around Europe, Diego Simeone has a lesser wage bill than Real and Barcelona, but he's outperforming them. Gianpiero Gasperini at Atalanta has a lesser wage bill than the rest of the clubs in Serie A, but because of his great management, they're outperforming their wage bill. That is Tottenham's route to success, is getting an elite manager and his innovation, meaning they outperform their wage bill. I think, and if they can get Pochettino back, I think that'll be an unbelievable coup. I think outside of maybe Tuchel, Guardiola, Simeone, I think he would be close to one of the top five managers in world football. And also, I think if they were to sell Harry Kane this summer, I think this is a unique summer in that most of Europe's top clubs are in financial difficulty. So if you say, gosh, we'll say 120 million, 130 million for Harry Kane, I think that would be, if you spent that wisely, I think that Spurs could really improve their team and put themselves in a great position for next season.
It's a very difficult high wire act when it comes to spending that 120 million well, isn't it? Like, because you're right, there probably is good value out there when you're looking for those players, the next Wesley Fofana, there's a bunch of those players who have come into the Premier League and performed really well at a rate where you know that this season, to buy them, they're going to be twice the cost. So I don't know. And do you think Spurs are a basket case? And what I'm picking up here is that Pochettino should stay well enough away from them because they're not willing to spend the money to back his vision.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, Pochettino, he's a great coach and he makes players better, but he's not a project manager. And Atlanta are the perfect example of this, and they're the perfect club to look at who are completely outperforming, but they're not outperforming just because of the manager. They're outperforming because they have a system in place with a scouting network, a director of football, and they're really all working in tandem. The manager doesn't really choose who he's bringing in. The director of football and the scouting network do. He works with them, he coaches them, he makes them better and they improve. Then they sell them on. If that's what Tottenham want to be, then Tottenham can be that. But they need to get a manager and a director of football and a scouting system that are going to do that. And what I'm trying to say here is that Tottenham are in the middle of two systems here. They want to spend money, but they're not willing to spend enough money to compete with Liverpool. And they want to bring in players to sell them on, but they're not willing to bring in this sort of project manager. So I don't understand why Daniel Levy is so surprised that it's not working, because he is stuck between two ideas and not doing either of them any good.
Pochettino 15-8 at the moment, 15-8 on. So he's odds on favourite to be the next Spurs manager. Erik ten Hag 5-1, Antonio Conte 11-2, Roberto Martinez 9-1, Graham Potter 14-1, Jurgen Klinsmann 18-1. That would be amazing. I mean, I would love the football they would play. I think it would be a car crash. I would not stop watching. Nuno 22-1, Zidane 25-1, Bielsa 25-1, Brendan Rodgers 25-1. So they don't. You guys in Paddy Power don't think that's going to happen. What do you think will happen? Surely the Pochettino thing is some kind of weird red herring where he's trying to get better terms from PSG, and I don't mean more money, but more control over the buying and selling and the shaping of that squad.
I would tend to agree with you. The reports have indicated in The Athletic that he's in issues with the sporting director, Leonardo. So I think if PSG said to him, I think you have full control over transfers and we're no longer listening to Leonardo, I think he probably would take that. Also, I think if Real Madrid came calling, I think he'd be interested in that as well. So yeah, I think it's, even though he's 8-15, I think it's far from a certainty he'll end up with Tottenham, even though they have been in talks.
Pick somebody else from that list there, because that's tricky. I mean, I don't know from that list who's going to get it.
I would lean towards, with Levy, I would lean towards somebody who's on the kind of cheaper end where you wouldn't have to pay too much of a fee. And so I would lean towards probably Graham Potter or Martinez. But if they hired Graham Potter, I think the reaction would not be good. Despite the Brighton strong XG performance this year, it's a hard sell to Spurs fans. Like,
Brighton's,
for a guy who's, yeah.
Brighton's XG, amazing. That, like, and was it, particularly their defence was sensational, was it?
Absolutely, yeah.
The third best defence?
It did certainly top 5 or 6.
Yeah,
I think. But I think that's fine for stats stars like, well, like, kind of very knowledgeable football fans. But I think for the wider Spurs fan base, like, that would definitely be a hard sell.
The Spurs fans already pissed off. Have just been shot in the stomach by Emma. We're not knowledgeable. Right, where are we going next?
I suppose we'll go with the sort of the European merry-go-round that's going on at the minute. Conte, who's leaving Inter, he's been linked with the Real Madrid job. Allegri is being linked with the Juventus job that Pirlo has just been sacked this morning. Zidane's obviously gone from Madrid, so Conte would be taking over from him. And Simone Inzaghi, he is due to be taking over from Conte's position at Inter. So we've got Conte to Real Madrid, Inzaghi to Inter, replacing Pirlo gone from Juventus. So Allegri to Juventus, Conte to Real Madrid, and Inzaghi to Inter Milan. It's all over the place.
Let me give you the odds for this then. Antonio Conte, odds on favourite here, 7-4 on Raul, 2-1, Pochettino, 10-3, Yogi Löw, 12-1. Guti, I have not thought about Guti in a long, long, long time, but he is 16-1. Thomas Tuchel is 25-1. I mean, there's loads of scenarios that you can see playing out here where Thomas Tuchel is suddenly available, but I don't know if we're about to see one. And I don't know. I mean, again, it's Real Madrid, so any piece of madness could happen.
Yeah, I think Real Madrid are one of these clubs that, if you listen to Nicky Bandini on Off the Ball last night in the football show, she was saying that the way that she was describing Conte is actually perfect for Real Madrid. He's basically a manager who wants more, 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 more. No matter how much he gets, he still wants more. Real Madrid will do that. They'll give him that. And there's no doubt that Conte is a really good manager. The fact that he was overachieving with Inter Milan this year, considering their financial situation at the minute, considering some of their players weren't even getting paid on time, I'd say Conte to Real Madrid would be absolutely perfect.
It does make sense.
It does make complete sense. And I think he is a strong enough personality to go in there and garner the respect of those Real Madrid players. So I think Conte to Real Madrid would be a really good move. Emma, can I ask, for example, of Real Madrid, how many teams like that sack their manager and then just because somebody was a former player, no matter how much experience they have at high-level management, how many players get linked with these jobs just because of their links with the club?
Yeah, so that's definitely a good question. It's something that we'd be very conscious of when we're making the market, especially now in modern football. We've seen it's become more of a trend with Solskjaer, starting with Guardiola, then Zidane, then obviously we've seen it with Pirlo. So it's kind of, you're nearly half the price on any kind of, on any player who's had a kind of a glorious history with that club. So when we were setting up this Real Madrid market, we would have had Raul very short to begin with because he's coaching with the Real Madrid second team, and he would have been obviously a hugely beloved player at Madrid, and I think probably if they flame out on Conte, Raul, I think is an easy fallback option for them.
That makes a lot of sense, and like the whole point of having him within the club means that he can be there. He's the break glass in case of emergency scenario, and this might well be an emergency scenario. So, so you do think that actually that price on Conte is about right, and if a deal can get done, that will happen, and if it doesn't, then it's going to be Raul.
Yeah, I would say so. The only thing is, as well, I think if Conte takes over, it could be very entertaining because Conte is an explosive character, and how he kind of, even though the kind of situation of Real Madrid having kind of a veteran-laden squad is perfect for him, but I think his dealings with the hierarchy and the likes of Sergio Ramos might go extremely badly. So I think it's one of these situations that could go very well or kind of flame out in 6 months.
There's a good chance Ramos isn't there. He could rescue Eden Hazard. Yeah. He's got a relationship with him already, and all of a sudden things are looking up, and like I think their version of Vinicius is pretty promising, and he's got a track record of bringing through some young players in the past as well. Okay, so where else? Anybody else you want to talk about?
No, I'd say we'd be better off going on to the Champions League final, because I think the Inzaghi move to Inter Milan seems to be more or less over the line. It's just about whether they can pay Lazio enough money to get him away from the club, and Zidane is obviously gone from Madrid. Allegri to Juventus is an interesting one, going back again to their old flame, and he's one of these managers that, you know, you just want him actually to come to the Premier League, kind of like Tuchel, to see if he can do exactly what he did with Juventus, and you've no doubt that he would. And just Juventus have been one of those clubs. Pirlo is a prime example of why Real Madrid giving Raul the job would be a bad idea at this point in time. I think everybody wants and dreams that the former player like Pep Guardiola did with Barcelona is going to come through. Lampard.
Raul might be a bit different, though, right?
Raul could be different. He could be the exception to the rule, like Guardiola was. But I think Pirlo, the experiment, really.
Well, Stevie G at least has gone off and done some work. You know, that I thought maybe would make Stevie G a bad manager turns out is the type of stuff that would make him a good manager. The constant fretting, the insecurity, the furrowed brow, perpetually coming from the fact that he's not quite sure if he's done enough work. That will drive him on to do some work. I'm go on.
I think Enda might know more about this, but I think as well he's hired kind of quite good coaches at Rangers. I think he kind of knows what he doesn't know more than other kind of young managers. He's hired Gary McAllister. I think he's hired a couple other coaches, and he doesn't actually, from my understanding, doesn't do much work in the training ground and leaves that to the kind of experienced coaches. So I think Gerard's been very shrewd in that regard.
Yeah, okay. his coaching staff is really good at Rangers. So I think, the Pirlo experiment just didn't work at Juventus. He went straight in with no coaching. He barely had his coaching badges by the time he was in the door. So I think that would be a warning sign to Real Madrid on Raul. But Champions League final, Ger, Chelsea, Tuchel.
I realise how difficult it was for you to say that, by the way. I just wanted to get that out there. It was the most difficult thing you've ever had to say. He's done a great job. Congratulations.
I didn't say Stephen Gerrard has done a great job.
Well done.
I said
it is.
Adam
Hetherington wants to know, will the Paddy Power half hour go on during the Euros? I love hearing the stats compiler's thoughts and using it to bluff my own footy intelligence. Don't worry, Adam. We will have you covered. We've big announcements coming around the Euros sooner rather than later, but I'm not going to reveal all our plans just today for free gratis and for nothing. You'll have to stay tuned to all our social channels for that. Make sure you are subscribed. Go back to the Champions League final there, Enda. Tell me what you wanted to say.
I was just going to say, will we move on to it?
Yes, let's go.
I actually thought you were on about the Championship playoff there for a while when you were talking about the biggest game in football this weekend, but yeah, Champions League final, Chelsea against Man City, an all-English final for the second time in, 3 years, 4 years? And I think going into this game, tactically, this has been the most interesting all-English final. Like, if you look at the Chelsea United game, it was Alex Ferguson. Like, it was the teams, it was the players, the individuals. And then the Liverpool-Tottenham one, Liverpool strong favourites. But going into this, it's like, two really brilliant minds of coaches going into it, and which one is going to crack? And I think it's going to be Thomas Tuchel.
Why do you think that?
I just think, looking at Chelsea over the last couple of weeks, N'Golo Kante, again, he's so vital to this system, and he's been so brilliant over the last couple of months. He's not fully fit.
He is. They were just, that's all they took. That was a minor hamstring about 2.5 weeks ago. He's fine.
I'd be worried about whether he's fully fit, but I just think the way that Man City have been just plowing on where they have been, whereas Chelsea are kind of dropping off a little bit against Aston Villa, you know. I just think Man City have so much talent in this team, and they're much more experienced players at this point. So I that's why I would give Man City this favourites tag for this game.
Okay. I mean, that's what the bookmakers say as well. Have the prices changed much over the last 3 weeks, Emmett?
Not a huge one. We've seen probably City sort of shorten up a little bit with the kind of Chelsea's run of recent form. So the prices are currently Man City 17 to 20, the draw 23 to 10, and Chelsea 7 to 2. I think it's interesting. I was looking at the kind of the stats since Tuchel took over on the 27th of January for the rest of the season. Both teams' kind of expected goals are actually quite similar. Their statistics are very similar, but it's funny, from the chances they've had, from the similar level of chances, Man City have scored 47 goals in those 19 games, and Chelsea have only scored 25. Oof. So that's kind of, I think that's reflective of some kind of maybe luck for City, but also very poor finishing from the likes of Timo Werner. So I think that the real kind of question to go into this game is, I think we know that Chelsea can match City, I think, in a way that I think probably no other Premier League team can, but if they get in the position, can they take their chances? That's the essential question for this match.
I'd love to see some deep dive, high level statistical nerdity around the epidemiology when you have somebody like Timo Werner who's missing sitters. How many other of his teammates fall into a rut and start missing sitters in the same way? Because it appears to me as if mocking is catching, that somehow missing of sitters becomes an epidemic. I mean, obviously there's a lot on our minds at the moment, and maybe that's informing my thought pattern here, but it does seem like you've seen this Chelsea team, other players who aren't just Werner, you're like, you look up and you see this miss and you're like, Werner's at it again. You're like, Werner's a sub tonight, what's going on, who's this? And I don't know, I just would be a little bit concerned, and I'd love to see some historical evidence. Like, did everybody else, when Diego Forlán was at Manchester United, did everybody else suddenly become lesser finishers because they're looking around going, oh no, what's going on, is there something in the water? I'd like to see some historical data analysis of that. Emmett, I'm going to give you like 5 minutes to come up with the answer to that question for me. If you can do it for me, I'd be very impressed.
I think that's the interesting thing about all this. I think that with the statistical kind of innovation in football, it doesn't take into account necessarily the psychological impact. It's easy to say, oh yeah, finishing is random, and don't worry about it. He'll get the next chance. But that doesn't take into account, as you say, the pressure that the other players feel if they've no confidence in their forward. And certainly we have seen that with Chelsea this season.
And I think that's one of the key things about when you muck around with your goalkeepers over the course of the season, and the defence all of a sudden has less confidence because the goalkeeper doesn't quite have the level of confidence that he had. Look, that's why Mendy being in this weekend is going to be hugely important as well. And I think that playing Kepa in the cup final the way they did was a mistake. And, you know, I just think that sometimes managers get in their own heads. Speaking of which, what do we expect here, Enda? Pep Guardiola has not been in his own head once this season.
No,
the result is the team has done very well in big games.
I think he's sorted out. He knows what he's at. He's not going to be playing Sergio Aguero in this game, I don't think. I think that would be the surprise. That would be the Pep Guardiola potentially overthinking this element. But I think he's going to go with the 4-3-3, false nine, with Kevin De Bruyne playing as the sort of midfield slash striker. And Sterling will not be in this game. Mahrez, Phil Foden, they'll be off Kevin De Bruyne, and then midfield probably going with Fernandinho because of how he's been playing over the last couple of weeks. I think he's 37, is he? 36, 37 at this point in time. And he's still playing the Busquets role that Pep Guardiola loves so much. That cynical bastard in the base of the midfield that never, ever, ever gets booked because he's so intelligent in what he does. And that's what Fernandinho is. And he has the passing ability to change the transition into attack as well. So I think a couple of weeks ago, if you said to me, and I think I did say it on the show, that Chelsea were favourites for this because of the weaknesses within the team and the way that the defence were setting up for Chelsea. But I think the answer to your question, Jer, about the strikers and the missed chances is that Mason Mount, Timo Werner, Tammy Abraham, if he's playing, Ziyech, you know, all these players are flaky enough with their finishing. There's no out-and-out striker. There's no number nine that's going to take every single chance that they get. So that's the answer to the Chelsea question. But I think Man City, if they get chances, every single one of their players are so clinical, and the chances they create are such high XG that they're gonna take advantage of them. Whereas I think Chelsea won't. That's where you're looking at the experience coming into these games.
You're predicting a clear-cut victory for Manchester City at the weekend.
I think if they perform, again, you're looking at a final, anything can happen, but I do think if they perform, then Man City are a much better side than Chelsea. I do think that. I think that there's the Premier League table shows it, the form over the last couple of weeks has shown it, that Man City...
The head-to-head doesn't.
The head-to-head doesn't, but, I mean, head-to-head doesn't matter in a final. That's one thing that many people will tell you, is that going into a final, you can look at the league form, you can look at the XG, but finals are always fairly random in how they happen, so that's why I always lean towards the better
sides. Is that true? Should we not be taking a little bit more into account of the fact that Tuchel's come up against Guardiola? He's seen what Guardiola has to offer. It's not going to be the first time in Thomas Tuchel's career that he's come up against a team playing a false nine.
No, I think you take maybe, so they've played twice since taken over, and the game in the Premier League, I think both teams made a lot of changes. Maybe you wouldn't take too much into account. Even though City didn't play a full strength team in the FA Cup game, I think it will give Chelsea definitely a couple of percentage points worth of extra belief, knowing that they've, like, when they perform, they can beat City. How many teams in the Premier League can actually say that? Chelsea can say that. I think in terms of the style, I think the style of play as well, I think you're kind of two similar styles as well. Since Tuchel's arrived, both teams have been the top two in possession stats. So I think that'll give City a challenge they don't normally usually face, a team that can actually press them aggressively. I think what City will try to do as well is, if anyone's watched the Dublin GAA team over the years, Kieran Kilkenny got taking the ball and slowing the ball down and allowed the team to get into their attacking structure. That's what City are going to do. They don't want the kind of an end-to-end counter-attack game. They'll try and slow the game down and try to stop the Chelsea counter-attacks. Whereas I think Chelsea, I think all their game plan will be around getting space in midfield and trying to get Timo Werner in behind Ruben Dias. They actually burned them on the counter-attack for Ziyech's goal in the cup final. And I think that's how they'll approach this game. It'll be Werner or maybe Christian Pulisic, if he starts, looking for runs in behind. And I think Chelsea just should be closer in the prices, given
head-to-head. 7-2 is way too big, isn't it?
I played a bit safer in terms of I like City kind of win or draw, a double chance at just under evens. That's at 5-6. So if Man City don't win the match in 90 minutes, that bet's a winner. I think it also that's like a good bet as well in what I think which will likely be a low scoring game between the two of the best defenses in Europe.
Okay, so what you're saying is a draw at full time, Manchester City to lift the trophy.
No.
Under 2.5 goals, Manchester City to win.
I'd be leaning. Yeah, probably like maybe a draw, a low scoring Chelsea win. Yeah, that'd be where I'd be leaning at the moment.
A Chelsea win.
Yeah, I just it's all about price, really. I think obviously City are an outstanding team. They're clearly the most likely winners. But I think just on Chelsea's performances under Tuchel and the head-to-head gives me some belief that this price should be shorter.
Right. Okay. That is pretty interesting. And I suppose that's why we have markets. Is there anything else in terms of first core or any of that kind of stuff that you think people should be aware of for this game?
Yeah, so we have a few interesting ones. I've kind of created a four-leg bet builder, which we're going to enhance on site this afternoon. So we have the second leg of that is Jorginho to score, and the reason we like that is because the generally in Champions League competition there are higher amount of penalties because the European referees are a bit stricter. City have actually it's a weakness. City they've actually conceded the joint second most penalties in the Premier League this season. And the one thing Timo Werner does really well is he wins penalties. He's actually won 7 penalties in the Premier League this season, which is more than any other player. I think just as I said, Chelsea's game plan will all be about getting him in behind. I think 11-2 on Jorginho to score any time looks a fair price to me, likely from the penalty spot.
If Timo Werner was a good quality penalty taker of his own penalties, maybe we would think very differently about his season, would we?
Definitely. I think Thomas Tuchel mentioned that this week. If, say, he scored, we'll say, six of eight penalties, we'll say, this season, and he's got like 12 league goals. I think he's 7 or 8 assists in the league as well. So I think like that people will be like, first season in the Premier League, not too bad.
Yeah, so it's almost as if he's a really good player, Jer, and he has different qualities to what people thought he had in the first place.
Oh, come on. Are you standing him now? Is that what's going on here?
I like Timo Werner.
Why don't you marry him then? And come on, like the misses have been
I would
have been good.
I mean, it's Chelsea Champions League winner potentially at the end of the week. I mean.
The misses have been heartbreaking. Like, and they have. I would be concerned that there's a contagion in the team because of it.
No, I don't buy that. I think he adds as much as he takes away with his finishing. The difference that he makes. People talk about Cavani's movement all the time. Timo Werner's movement is really good, and if he gets that little bit of half a yard, if he can just keep himself onside for half a second longer, then he's creating a mountain of chances for the team. And he provides so much danger in behind with his pace because people underestimate his pace all the time that he stretches defences. He's a really good player. If he just gets his finishing, he'll be grand.
To quote the great Liam Brady, if me auntie had balls, she'd be me uncle.
So, well, I mean, you know,
not to go all,
just give him a chance.
Not to go all Little Britain, says Paul, but I love the idea that this is an all English final. Foreign owners, foreign managers, maybe 4 English players max will start out of the 22 on the pitch. Rule Britannia, not so much. Cheers, lads, he says. A reminder, of course, Champions League coverage on OTB over the course of the weekend. Teddy Sheringham, Sean Wright Phillips and Denise O'Sullivan are on our preview special. You'll be able to watch that tomorrow morning at 11. You'll hear it on the radio tomorrow afternoon. We'll also get the thoughts of Mark Lawrenson, Andy Reid, Stephen Elliott, Dan McDonald and Johnny Ward across Saturday and Sunday as well. So, Emmett, build my bet builder here for me. Under 2.5 goals?
I would lean that way, but I think just that the price is actually shortened than the 4-7, so I'm not as sweet on that now. The two other selections I like for the bet builder is one simple one: Mason Mount have a shot on target around 5-6. He's the joint most shots on target, shots per game of any Chelsea player, along with Werner. So I think that looks a fair price. And lastly, an interesting one is Cesar Azpilicueta to be carded around 13-5, and the reason for that is, I think he'll have the main responsibility of marking Phil Foden. I think that's a really difficult task for any defender. I don't know if you saw the Man City Villa game, Jer, where Matty Cash basically was sent off because Foden was running rings around him and he was just so frustrated that he kind of lashed out. And I think Azpilicueta will be marking Foden tightly. And if he fails him at all, the referee for this match, Antonio Mejia-Lajas, will be noted for being a very strict Spanish referee. So I think 13-5 looks a fair price here. So I think if you've all those four legs click, we're talking about a bet builder at over 60-1. And we're going to enhance that to 80-1 on the specials paid. So I think that's definitely worth the €5, €10 for any customer that's interested.
All right, so the four legs are Mason Mount to have a shot on target, Cesar Azpilicueta to get booked, and the other two?
So Jorginho to score and a Chelsea winner draw double chance.
Okay, all right. So that is the crack. And I think there's a €5 free bet on your bet builder on Paddy Power for this final as well. Emmett, good stuff. Thanks a million. Enjoy the game. There's nothing else you want to say about the Champions League final, is there?
No, all good. I think we've exhausted all betting ideas there.
Have you got your... I've
got a bet builder, yeah.
Go on.
I was very close with the United one in Europa League. I had under 2.5 goals... it was under 3.5 goals. Both teams to score. It was Eric Bailly to be booked and United to win by exactly one goal. So obviously, both teams to score. Yes, Jorginho to be booked because, I mean, come on, it's Jorginho. He's always booked. And Phil Foden to have one shot or more on target. Because he's going to. So that's coming in at about 5-1 or just under 5-1. So I think that's a fairly decent little nibble.
All right. Like the sound of that. Best of luck to both of you for whatever your punts are this weekend and to everybody out there watching as well. This is the Paddy Power Half Hour. We'll see you again real soon. Take care.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.